You're listening to episode 75 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right?
Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
Hey, what's up, Storyteller Tribe? In case you missed it, we're currently accepting applications from listeners who'd love a chance to be featured on 88 Cups of Tea. We're fast approaching our 88th episode, and I'd love to celebrate that milestone episode with you. This super special episode is one that I've been really excited about for quite some time, and I'm thrilled the time has come to spotlight listeners who've been super fans of our show. We're featuring a mashup of 8 lucky listeners in our 88th episode, and all the details, along with a link to the application, was sent to our newsletter subscribers. If you haven't signed up yet, be sure to sign up now at 88cupsoftea.com/subscribe, because I'm sending out a final reminder early next week about the applications, and I will include the link to the application one last time. The deadline to submit your application is Wednesday, March 1st. Thank you so much to the listeners who already submitted their applications. We received really powerful responses. This selection process is going to be really tough. Thank you all for taking the time to put so much heart in your answers. We have so much love for each and every one of you. Moving on to the next part of our show, if you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with other fellow writers, or if you'd like to submit questions for future guests on our show, join me over in our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. There's tons of love, support, and encouragement going on in this special community of ours. I can't wait to see you in there. Before we get into introductions, I wanted to thank Vermont College of Fine Arts for sponsoring today's episode. They're the first low-residency MFA program in the nation to focus exclusively on writers for young readers. At the end of the show, you'll find out why they're ranked one of the best low-residency writing programs in the country. We have Lillian Rivera on the show today. Lillian is the debut author of The Education of Margot Sanchez, and she was recently named a 2017 Face to Watch by the LA Times. In today's episode, we dive right into the heartwarming inspiration that influenced Lillian's book and her experiences growing up in New York. For my craft-driven writers, you're going to love Lillian's advice and craft tips on building complex characters and how writing a character study will help you make decisions in your novel that are true to your character. Lillian walks us through writing emotionally heavy scenes and how to capture universal ideas in your story while representing underappreciated voices. We unpack Lillian's experience with the Penn Center Emerging Voices Fellowship and the kinds of resources it provides writers. And we go even further to discuss how writers can financially support their writing with grants and fellowships. I know there's a lot of you who are about to query literary agents, so you'll want to pay special attention to Lillian's advice on writing them. Now let's jump right in. Lillian, I'm so happy to have you on the show. How are you?
Hi, great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm actually a big fan, so it's really cool for me to be a part of this.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you. I'm very, very flattered, and I'm a big fan of your work. I'm thrilled to have you on the show. I'd love for the listeners to learn more about you, and also it's so exciting. Your book has just released. Yes! Lillian, I'd love to jump in and get started and ask you how you fell in love with writing.
I grew up in New York and I would walk around with a pen and paper all the time writing stuff. I was really shy, so it was probably my way of dealing with that shyness. I would be quiet and I would be a really super observant of things. My way of dealing with things was just to write it out. I would write all the time. So I grew up that way, writing out whatever fears or anxieties I might have had in weird little notebooks. I still do to this day.
Was reading also a big part of your life where it influenced you in how you wrote when you were writing?
Yes. I came from a big family. There were 5 of us all together. And my mom made it a point to take us to the library a lot. And we would just walk there all together and we would do story time. I would read all the time. I would just grab whatever the librarian might give to me or it was interesting to me.
So very much like a sponge.
Yes, but not writing that. I feel my writing when I was young was journal writing. I didn't write fiction or poetry or any of that stuff. I didn't come until really, really, really late in my years.
Now that I know that you read a lot of different types of books, it really didn't matter which genre. Did you have one book that you remember that really stood out to you, or an author?
With me, it was Judy Blume.
Yeah.
Obviously, we all went through that phase, right, of reading Judy Blume and falling in love with her stories. For me, it was wild because I obviously wasn't living in that world of suburban girls, but I could totally relate to what they were going through. I love Dini a lot because it talked about scoliosis, which was the curvature of the spine. And that was something that I had when I was in high school. So I kind of related to her. Of course, the class, are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. So I read those and I devoured all of Judy Blume books, even the middle grade one.
What are you most excited about right now?
It's been interesting. There's people, they've reached out to me on Twitter, even send me DMs of how important it is to be able to read a Latina protagonist, to understand that their voice is being captured, even if it's not similar history, but still there are certain things in my book I feel is totally universal. That to me is exciting. I can't get enough of that. I can't get enough of images of my book being taken photos of. Book Instagrams. I love that stuff. I wish I was more creative.
I'm like trying to step up my Instagram game. I'm like, man, these kids are getting really up there with their styles. They've got the white desk, these pink peonies. I'm like, damn, and those look like real peonies. I have no time to go out and buy peonies right now to decorate this book. It's crazy, but I love looking through Bookstagram photos. I love that you appreciate that too. There's so much time that goes into styling.
It's insane. I get really emotional when I see someone put so much effort and have my book in the middle.
That's how I feel for you authors. And I'm not even the author here. I'm just like, damn, I'm so touched that they do this. That's so exciting. Could you give the listeners a snapshot of the world you created for The Education of Margo Sanchez?
The Education of Margo Sanchez is a coming-of-age novel about Margo Sanchez, a girl who is sort of a sheltered Latina who is forced to work at her father's failing supermarket in the South Bronx. And it's set in the summer. It's a season where she learns about herself and her family and the realities of what life is really like. Margo Sanchez, she's been living in this sheltered life because of her parents. That summer is a summer when she wakes up and sees everything for the first time. I love summer novels. New York in the summertime is really magical. Everyone is outside and everyone is hot. It's also a great time for creativity, for art, for music. I wanted to capture those moments, and especially in the South Bronx, which is also really beautiful itself.
I love that. I do agree with you about the summer. That's also one of my more favorite times, although not at the cusp of the heat waves. But aside from the heat waves, yes, it's a very magical time. And because also most of my life, I did grow up in the suburbs, I saw lots of fireflies. I know going in the city, there are not that many, but in the suburbs, you can find a lot of fireflies to add to that magical atmosphere. I'm trying to convince my girlfriend to visit New York in the summer, and she's like, no, it's too hot. Let's get into the inspiration behind this world that you created. What got you from blank slate to then idea?
There was no question that I wanted to write a young adult novel. I enjoyed writing the dialogue of that. I think I can capture it. When I set out to write a novel, I always knew that I wanted to start off with that young voice. As for the inspiration behind it, my first job, not that this is any way autobiographical, but my first summer job was working with my father. My sister and I were with him that summer, and my brothers and my mom, they all went to Puerto Rico. We were left with my father, who took care of us pretty much, and then I was also working with him. And it was just a summer of revelation for me. I was 14 years old. My father was really larger than life. He still is. And he was very serious and very head of the household for sure. And I went to see him at work, and we weren't working side by side in any way, but I got to see him in the service industry. He worked as a nurse's aide. It became a revelation to me in the sense of seeing him outside of he can do no wrong to seeing him serving other people in a humbling way. And there were other surprises that happened that summer, not in the book. I want to capture that moment of seeing your father for the first time in a different light. And that was the inspiration for the book.
That was powerful. Writing about family, especially realizations about certain family members where you look up to a person. Children have this idea that our parents, or at least for me, are always almost godlike, where they can do no wrong. They're almost not human. Mm-hmm. And I think realizing that also is popping the bubble where it's like, oh, wait, my mom and dad, they're human. I find that really difficult to capture in writing. You're able to inject her voice and also weaving in this huge revelation of who your loved ones are and realizing them and seeing them for the first time as human. How was that journey for you?
With Margot Sanchez, she is a complicated teenager. It's not just one simple aspect she's trying to hold on to, this mask that she's been wearing. She really wants to be accepted by these prep school kids. Her parents send her to that school. She's not a scholarship kid. Her parents are paying for it, so that does something. As she's trying really desperately to fit into that world, whatever that world is, she's determined to hold on to this mask no matter what. And even if she comes out ugly, she's going to keep it on. She can't go on like that. This mask is not going to protect her. So she's going to have to strip off and get real and be honest. It takes time and it takes these realizations and just being really honest about the way she's been treating her friend, honest about the way she's even treating her prep school friends. I wanted her to be complicated in that sense. She can be kind of mean and kind of upsetting, but then she could also be funny and sweet when she tries. There was something about writing that kind of character. And I wrote the character, I don't know if other people do this, but I try to write somewhat character studies, sort of like journaling, asking the question, what does she want? What does she want? What does she need? What are the things that she likes? Why is she acting this way? Is this true to her character? Is this true to her? And I'll just keep going back whenever I would stumble and feel things aren't quite right, what she's doing. Then I go back to that question of what is it that she wants? And I'll keep asking that question and going over, like, Margot likes this, or she likes black, or she likes to listen to girl groups. Or what did that mean when she used to wear girl group outfits and tease her hair? And then all of a sudden, no one likes that. And now she listens to Taylor Swift. And what does that mean? And, you know, going on and on like that, and just go back to the character itself.
And then what would you say is your most difficult scene to write in your novel?
The most difficult scene to write in my novel would have to be a scene between her and her mother. This is towards the end.
Yeah.
And becomes the moment when she really sees her mom for the first time. And it's not as black and white, but then she really sees her mom for the first time and the choices that maybe had propelled her to where she is at that moment. And it was, to me, a hard chapter to write because it felt very real.
It was very emotional when you were writing it?
Yeah, it was emotional. It was emotional because I felt her mother's pain. And for Margot, it was really important moment for her, for both her mom, because she was always daddy's little girl. She was princesa. She was her daddy's little girl. So she was her favorite. And her mom was not in that equation. It shifts when they have that confrontation.
Knowing that this is a very, very difficult scene to write, I guess in a way you have to pull away from it and almost approach it logistically so that you can get through it.
The way I write a novel is I write first draft fairly quickly, and then it takes me years to rewrite it. I could throw up a draft. I could just write it out, and then whatever emotions comes out, come out. But it takes me a long while for me to go through those chapters again. So any kind of emotional chapters or hard chapters that I wrote in this novel, I would just go through it again and again. There were many different versions of each chapter. I would just keep going until it seemed it was right.
How do you know when it's right? Do you have critique partners, workshop? I know that you completed the Emerging Voices program for Penn Center. How do you know? Do you just know through your gut, or do you need to pass it around and hear critiques and thoughts?
I definitely relied on a group of writers to read my early drafts of this novel. There were about 5 of us, and we would meet whenever we could here in LA. And they read various versions of this novel. And then when I received the Penn Center USA Emerging Voices Fellowship, I was connected with a mentor, Cecil Castellucci. She writes young adult and graphic novels and even picture books. And so she was my mentor, and she read it and she gave me notes as well. And so I've had all these people give me notes. And then when it was ready to send out to an agent, then my agent gave me notes. And then my editor, I could only go through it with someone else telling me what's wrong because I am in a bubble. I do feel like I'm usually driving with the light off. I don't know if this is working.
I love that you had a really strong team behind you. Like, I know that you said that you could write a great first draft, but then it takes a bit of time. How long do you usually take for your writing process with the first draft?
I took a writing course here in LA through this author named Al Watt, W-A-T-T. And he teaches this method of writing your first novel in 90 days. I've written this novel in 90 days, the first draft. And the second novel, which is with my editor now, I wrote in 90 days, the first draft. I've gone through it. He has a step-by-step process, but it works for me. I'll probably do the third novel not in 90 days. It worked for the first two.
Holy moly, 90 days, that's so fast. It almost reminds me of NaNoWriMo.
Yes.
Dang, that's three NaNoWriMos, right? Oh, 30, 60, 90. Yeah. Gosh, that's insane. It sounds like it's very much focused on word count, just to get it down, I guess.
Yeah, you're going through it. You're answering certain questions, and it's all through the three arcs of storytelling. And it works in the sense I just go through it. I have the outline. I'm just throwing it out there and seeing what works. But then you have to go back, and it takes a long time.
Yeah, I feel you. For that, when you do go back, let's say now you're in the revising part of your progress with your book, do you usually have a ritual or a habit of when you love to write or when you write the most without forcing yourself? Are you a morning person or an evening or randomly throughout the day?
I guess it all depends. I honestly feel I'm a stronger writer in the morning. I have two kids, and so my morning is not really my morning, but it's really their morning. So I take up as much time as I can. I'm lucky enough, I'm not working a full-time gig, so I have the chance to be able to write during the day. But when I was working full-time, still freelancing, but working full-time, I would just write 2 hours before I go to sleep, or 2 hours when I'm waiting for some kid to come out of practice. I'm usually in the car. I have my laptop. I'll write in the car. My car is definitely my second office.
I was going to say it's a mobile office. Lilium, I'm not sure if a lot of listeners would know this, but now they will. You've already written a lot before your book and more journalistic types of writing. How was the transition over from full-time to freelancing now, where you can work on your own schedule around your own time and family?
My background is in entertainment journalism, so I've always done celebrity interviews or fashion interviews, because my background is a little bit on that as well. But all that stuff is inspiring fiction. It's all strange, especially if you live in LA. It's not normal stuff.
Well, 9 to 5.
Yes. You know, you're on a set or you're following someone around and you're trying to be friendly with them, but it's not a real friendship, but you're trying to capture their life in a way for your writing. But it's all really fascinating to me. I love that kind of stuff. It gave me the discipline of deadlines. I always hit my deadlines no matter what. I think that was my job. I think it just helped my writing, and there has to be quickness to my writing. And depending on what kind of style or who the newspaper or the client is, I'm trying to convey their love. The transition in the sense is you just have to hustle like everything. You're freelancing. It's all hustle to get the next gig. I like consistency. My last job was as a copywriter for a fashion brand. I would go in and write and go to their offices. And it was fun. And I did that for a year. And it was still great because it does feed into my fiction no matter what. You're there and there are certain hierarchies and you're learning new rules about what that world is like. It does feed into my own work.
I would love to know a moment in your career or your life that you felt really, really at the bottom pit of your career. Could you take us back to that moment and how you're able to bring yourself out of it?
I do recall spending many times on the phone with my close friend and crying and saying that it's not going to happen. I was submitting my novel to agents. I was at that point. I thought I was ready. I thought the novel was ready. And I was just like, I'm not getting anything. You know, I was getting rejections. It's like, this isn't going to happen. And it's not like I'm going to have to write a novel because there's always going to be another novel. But it was more like I'm going to have to give up this novel and work on another one. I recall that day very vividly of how I was miserable and just, and finally being honest about it with someone else. I know the game and I've been around for a while, so I understand rejections aren't personal and you don't know what is going on behind those things. As soon as I get a rejection from a short story, I figure out where it should go next. It's not from lack of being naive and innocent. It was more of like, I really did feel like it was at that point where I had to give it up. And so it felt like almost like a mourning period. But then I shared it. I cried. I was in the car. And then I allowed myself to be really sad about it for a couple of days. And then I continued. I was like, well, you know, I'm just going to keep sending it out. Who cares? I try to do that, even if I'm rejected for whatever it is. It could be some sort of fellowship that I was applying for, or again, like a rejection for a short story. I allow myself the sadness of that. But then I'm like, I need to get to work. And so then the next day I have to get to work and figure out what my next move is.
I would be pretty much devastated. I don't know if I would approach that way. That's really admirable. So for those listeners who just recently got rejected with their work, what's the general rule of thumb that you'd like to tell them, or just advice you want to pass on?
Whatever it is, cry it out, eat a lot of cookies.
Ice cream is allowed. Yes, lots of ice cream.
Ice cream. For me, I tend to like to go online and look at really pretty clothes and maybe contemplate buying them. So that helps
me. Nice. I like to look at food.
Exactly. Like I'm just, but then the next day it's work. For me, this is, in a way it's work, and I want my work to be out there. So I'm always thinking of where I could go next or what I could do next. Or with this novel, I got a really generous grant from the Elizabeth George Foundation. That application process wasn't easy. It took a lot of time asking for recommendations and several levels I had to pass to get to that point. But the thing is that you have to do it. You can't win it unless you're in it.
Such a badass hustler mentality. I love it. So inspiring. Okay, so about this grant, I'm really curious. I've never applied for grants or anything like that, so I don't know the world of that. I am curious, what do you mean by several different stages?
Specifically with the Elizabeth George Foundation, this is a woman who is generous and gives money out to emerging writers. She would accept a sample of your novel and you would break down why you needed the money and how much you're asking for. Obviously, you have to have a budget as to why you need the money. And I was asking specifically to try to finish this novel. And I needed it for daycare for my kid, to pay for any fiction classes or anything that I could break it down to her. Because a person is going to give money, but they're not just going to give it to you like a lottery. They want to make sure that it's an investment that you're going to actually do the work. That first level was, here's my sample and here's why I need the money. The second level is like, oh, and then here's some people who recommend me, who say I'm worth it. And then they say yes or no. This was a process like at least 6 months.
Oh yeah, I'm sure, because there's so many people she has to sift through. I'm sure there's going to be quite a few people just as deserving, right?
Right.
So I'm sure it's such a difficult process on her side as well.
I'm really an advocate for that. I know I haven't done that much this year, but I'm always a type of person that I'm looking for grants or fellowship because, you know, obviously with writing, it's unless you're making, you know, New York Times bestseller and you're getting movie deals left and right, writing is not a huge paying gig. So you have to find ways to supplement it. And I feel that you put yourself out there, there's a lot of fellowships and grants that you could find and search for and hopefully could help.
That's really great advice for listeners. Do you mind also walking us through your experience for the Emerging Voices program of Los Angeles Penn Center? You completed that in 2013, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It sounded like an incredible experience. Just from touching on it a little bit earlier in our conversation, to get into this program, did you have to do a similar type of process of all the different layered steps with the grant that we were talking about earlier?
Definitely. There was obviously an application process and there were several questions in there that you had to answer. What your project was, what your intentions, why you wanted to be an Emerging Voices fellow and things like that, why you thought that you deserved it. And it was really pretty thorough. That's just the application. And then they narrowed it down. And then you would have an interview process. And in the interview process, they had at least 4 or 5 people sitting around a table and they were interviewing you. It was really intimidating, but you go through it and then you just wait. But it was worth it. It was worth it. The fellowship itself, we would meet each week. We'd have different authors that would talk to us. We would read almost a book a week at least. We would have UCLA classes, writing classes at Penn as well. It was pretty intense the time that I did it, but it was worth it. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about craft. And besides being paired with a mentor as well, it helped me finish another draft of this novel. It was at that moment when I sent it out to agents.
Wow, that sounds like a dream. I did a bit of research about it. And like you mentioned, once you get accepted, they also provide those UCLA classes and then having authors coming in and talking, like you also mentioned. I'm like, wow, this is such an incredible hub where they're mm-hmm. really cultivating and nurturing these emerging voices. It's just really amazing that they have something like that out there. When I was reading about it online, I was blown away. That's so amazing that people's generosity, including the grants too, they believe so much in creativity and writers and the magic that writers can give and put back and contribute to society is just mind-blowing. To writers who are not in the Penn Center program, just from your own experiences with mentors in your own way along your career, what do you advise to them specifically about mentors?
I feel that even if I didn't have those fellowship, having the mentor available to me, I feel you have to create that for yourself. You can do this by showing up to book signings and readings and supporting authors and just say, hey, I'm a budding writer. Just put yourself out there. Obviously, some authors don't have time or they don't like doing that, or people are mostly shy. I feel like for the most part, I would have done that anyway. I would have carved a way of being supportive. For example, even doing a podcast, I feel that's a great way of being able to meet people that you admire and being able to interview them and talk to them. At one point, I was doing a podcast for an East LA community radio station, and I would interview authors that I love. That was my way of actually learning from them.
Are you still doing that?
I'm not now, but I did it for 2.5 years, I think. It was great. It was really great. Everyone was super open to be interviewed. So I was able to interview people I love, Ana Castillo and Matt Johnson and Victor Laval. So it wasn't just young adult, but it was a mixture of all these different people and Meg Medina and people that I love. It was a way for me to learn. There's ways around not getting the traditional mentor relationship, but ways of being able to get that support that you need.
Yes, I love how you put that. Can I ask you about the work that you're currently working on?
Right now, I just submitted another version of a second novel. It's a young adult novel. It's set in the Bronx, but it's set a near future Bronx. It's considered dystopian in a way. My editor at Simon & Schuster, Zareen, has it, and I'm sure I'll be getting notes soon. I'm excited about that.
That's so amazing. And you love your editor?
Yes, yes, I love her. This whole process has been amazing. She's just really great. Everyone at Simon & Schuster has been great. It's been so smooth. There hasn't been any drama or anything like that. There's no complaints.
Your cover is beautiful. It caught my eye and I was just like, wow, I haven't seen a cover like this. This is really cool. Did they ask you for your opinion?
I have a Pinterest board, which is always helpful for me. I just drop pictures there of things that inspire me or location or anything that kind of reminds me of the novel I'm working on. And so I had a Pinterest board and I shared it with them and they told me they were going to have an artist. She came back with this version and it was great. It was just really the description of what Margot Sanchez looked like. She gave a little bit of an attitude, which is sort of what Margot is.
Yeah.
She really did capture the artist. It was great.
It's amazing that you have a book cover as well that you love. It's not all authors get that opportunity to fully love the cover. It sounds like everything just worked out so wonderfully for you. So you're a mom of two children, right?
Yes.
We have a lot of listeners who are moms trying to balance time with kids to work around their work hours, just trying to keep chugging along. Do you have any advice that you can share with fellow moms that might be struggling with trying to find time to write?
It's tough for sure. There aren't that many hours in the day. But if you break it down and allow yourself that moment to sneak in some writing, it doesn't have to be in front of a laptop. You could just carry a notebook and jot stuff down. I think when I was at working full time, I would sometimes use my half an hour of lunch and just write using my notebook because I was like, okay, I know I have to write this chapter and I'm working on it in my head, but let me just jot down some ideas. I feel if you force yourself to write every day, even if it's only 15 minutes, that you build that muscle and it becomes easier for you to write wherever. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter where. So I write in the car, I write in the kitchen table, I write waiting for somebody. You just don't have to fool yourself into thinking that it's okay that you're writing. It doesn't matter where because you don't need to be in a set base, a set time. I need 2 hours. I need to have my coffee. I need to have this. The formula has to be right. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be. You just have to have the time and just force it. I don't have time. But my kids know that I write. So they know that when mom's writing, leave her alone.
How does that conversation go? Do you tell them or they already instinctively know to just step away and do their own thing?
Mostly. I have a 5-year-old, so she's not going to listen. But
she's like, hell no, this is my time.
I know. She's like, what are you talking about? Just feed me. But the older one does. Sometimes they'll be talking to me. I'll be looking at them and I'm still typing. I'm just like, what did you say? No, they're just used to me. They're used to seeing me that way because I've always been that way. I've always had deadlines to meet and I had to write something. So they're used to that.
All right, so Lily, tips on query letters. You could spit out whatever you want to say, whatever comes to your head.
Definitely get that first paragraph down pat when it comes to what your book is about. You just need 3 or 4 sentences. And also always think about what book your novel is compared to. Those comp books. My novel is Down These Mean Streets with Hunger Games, something like that, so that the agents or publishing houses will know exactly what you're talking about.
Do you advise also a little bit of a hello, how are you, or just go straight to what your book is about?
Get quick. It's dear whoever, I'm writing for representation, my novel is blah, blah, blah. Because they're getting hundreds of these.
How to overcome writer's block.
I don't believe in writer's block. I believe that there's always something you write. If I'm having a problem with whatever my big project is, a novel, and it's not going well, then I could jump into a short story, or I could write a journal post, or I could pretend I'm going to write a personal essay, which may never be published, but at least I could write it out. Or I could just write, I hate this. You could just write. It'll change tomorrow. You could go to the museum and it'll change. You could meet a friend and it'll change whatever is blocking. I don't believe in writer's block. I believe that there's always something that you can write.
Love that. Okay, what is the best advice you have ever received? And please pass it along.
The only advice I can say is it's not personal. It's not personal. It's just, all right, it's not working for them. All right, then you're not the one for me. Then I have to move on to the next.
Amazing. And we'll wrap it up. A book that you would recommend that you love.
One of the last books that I've read recently, which I really loved, was Meg Medina's Burn Baby Burn. It's her latest young adult novel. It's set in the 70s. I'm a girl who works in a bodega, and it's during the Summer of Sam. Meg Medina is one of my favorite people of all time. And the reason why I love this story so much is because she really does capture what young women are having to deal with now. And at that time, it was the beginning of the feminist movement in the 70s. And it's really about finding your voice and dealing with those things that are scary. At that time, it was the Summer of Sam. So people were scared of the serial killer. But there was more to that. It was more like the fear of what your family secrets will take you down if you keep them. I love how she did that.
Are there any resources that you can point out for writers as well who are in their progress of finishing up their manuscript or about to pass it over to their agents? Do you have any resources that you really loved when you were writing The Education of Margot Sanchez?
I don't know if people use it still, but I was using Query Tracker when I was submitting, and they just break down who is responding to queries and
it would
be nice. I was following that all the time. For me, even writing wise, I use Scrivener.
Yes, I love Scrivener.
Scrivener is the best thing ever. It breaks down everything, put characters, you can put images. It's so great. I don't know how I could write anything without using Scrivener. I use it for short stories too. I'm sure there's a lot more things that I'm not using it.
Scrivener has a lot of stuff. I only know 1/5 of what they're capable of, and it's already so much. I don't even know if I need any more.
Exactly. To me, Scrivener is great. And just asking around, because you never know who might know an agent or who might know a publisher. You just never know. So a lot of people who I queried to were friends of their agents, whoever it was, like they knew somebody. So that always helps as well.
Lilium, you've been so awesome. Huge congratulations again on your debut release. That's so exciting.
Thank you so much.
And that wraps up our episode with the awesome Lilium Rivera. Lilium, thank you so much for sharing your stories and experiences. I had a really great time with you. Storytellers, thank you for listening in and joining us. As always, please say hi to Lilium on Twitter at LiliumR, and that's Lilium with 3 L's. Lilium recommended fantastic resources for you to check out, and we have them all linked up in our show notes page over at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Lilium Rivera. Don't forget to join our Facebook group if you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with other writers. You can also submit questions for future guests on our show, and we also post sneak peeks of future episodes. Join me over in our new Facebook group at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. There's tons of love, support, and encouragement going on in this special community of ours. I can't wait to meet you in there. At the very top of the show, I mentioned Vermont College of Fine Arts, and I know there's a lot of you who are really interested in writing books for children or young adults, so you'll definitely want to pay special attention to what Vermont College of Fine Arts has to offer. VCFA has 3 different graduate level programs for writers, and I'll be going into detail about their program called Writing for Children and Young Adults. Students meet up twice a year on their gorgeous campus in the heart of historic Montpelier in Vermont for intensive 10-day residencies. It's a lot like 10-day retreats for writers, and you guys know how much I love retreats. Imagine attending BCFA's MFA program where you'll be immersed in an amazing writing community filled with intensive workshops, lectures, panel discussions, and readings that are always challenging and inspiring you. After the life-changing experiences at the residencies, you and the faculty will design your own course for the start of the semester by really zoning in on your specific writing goals. Throughout the semester, you'll continue working with faculty mentors through telephone conferences, emails, and letters. So basically, you're receiving one-on-one mentorship throughout your semester as you take control in shaping the kind of education you want out of your time with VCFA. Check out 88cupsoftea.com/VCFA for more info.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.